Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the program to empower you, and you're going to learn from a study from Punjab University in India that ginkgo biloba is good at getting rid of those amyloid beta plaque, the aggregation of that, and also in an aluminum-induced neurotoxicity, meaning that if you have aluminum, which we all do to some degree, and especially from the vaccines, in our brain, that ginkgo can help get rid of that so it doesn't end up causing us to go to neurotoxic reactions for most of our lives, because that aluminum does not leach out of the body. Then we have a lot of special input today. You're going to hear from the World Health Organization chief scientist caught in a disinformation campaign. It's only 2 minutes 47 seconds long, but you'll hear it begin with about a minute and a half of pro-vaccine, no dangers, perfectly safe monitoring system, and then a recording that I'm sure she was not happy getting out of a special hearing where she said just the opposite. Also, talking about vaccines, the government has two committees. These are scientist oversight committees at the CDC and the FDA. They're the final arbiters of what gets done. If a vaccine is added to a schedule to be taken, they decide it. Now, you would assume that since they're mandating vaccines and that these have never been studied individually or collectively for their toxic reactions when they go into a child, that there'd be good science behind it. But don't take my word for that. You're going to find out what they did last year about approving a hepatitis B vaccine in their own words. I want you to listen very carefully because these are considered the top vaccine doctors in the country, and they're all saying the same thing. And I'll let you hear what that is. Also, for those who question some aspects of what happened on 9/11, the official story, we've come across some interesting video. And I'm going to play it first. Then I'm going to have Les Jamieson on, who has spent thousands and thousands of hours on this topic with thousands of architects and engineers who've raised questions, but none of these questions have made it into mainstream media. None of them. Why not? This is stuff we should know about. This is about Building 7. I'm not focusing on the other two buildings, but Building 7 I am. And so Les Jamieson, who studied the alternative research on 9/11, has been publicly active in the 9/11 truth movement for over a dozen years. And so he's going to be here to try to give us the background on why was this information that you're going to see, as well as hear, why was none of this made as a part of the presentation and witnesses, over 200 witnesses who experienced this, why were they not invited to testify? It just raises a lot of serious questions. Now, you can watch today's video clips, as well as listen to them by going to youtube.com/PRNFM, youtube.com/PRNFM. You can download today's program and share it with others by going to our archive, and that archive number is, write it down please, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And tomorrow I'm going to be taking your voicemails again and to call and leave a message that you believe people would be interested in the answer or you have a question. That number is 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. And, of course, to listen live, as most of you right now are on the either a computer or a cell phone, cabs, truck drivers, people driving in cars all over the country, they're listening. I want to thank, by the way, according to the statistics came in, nearly 12 million people listened over the last year. 12 million. That's a bunch of people. And you can call Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, and listen to this program live. Here's the number, 774-337-6068, 774-337-6068. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. Ginkgo is very important. There are thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature what it does. I recommend it in creating protocols for people with brain conditions. I don't care if it's Alzheimer's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, myasthenia gravis, whatever it is, it's important. It's one piece of a very important series of approaches to helping the brain. Part of our problem is that we're constantly bombarding our brain and central nervous system with heavy metals, mercury, lead, cadmium. But up at the top of that list has to be aluminum. And according to news reporting originating from India, from Punjab University, protein misfolding and aggregation of amyloid beta peptides, as well as formation of neurofibrillary tangles, are the signature hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease. That's how we develop this pathology. Well, to prevent that, molecular chaperones come into play as they facilitate the refolding of the misfolded proteins and cell protection against stress. So, that stress being aluminum. And that's where ginkgo biloba comes in, because there is definite evidence that ginkgo biloba works against the aggregation of this whole process and therefore helps prevent the aluminum-induced Alzheimer's disease-based model. I won't go into the science of the neuroscience of the protein hyperphosphorylation, which can be attributed to activation of heat shock factor. It becomes very complicated, but just in lay language, understand this. To protect your brain from developing all of the signature of Alzheimer's and dementia, ginkgo twice a day, 100 milligrams. How about that? From the University of Illinois, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Clinical Investigation, comes a study about chronic stress is a cancer risk. Now, we knew it was a heart disease risk. It was a risk for stroke and a risk for any form of arterial rupture. Now, here's the latest. Vitamin C can help. Excuse me. What do I mean? Well, I'll go into this. Recent research that chronic stress could trigger a key mechanism that fuels the growth of cancer stem cells, and those stem cells are what create tumors. A study published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation found that a stress hormone, you've heard me mention it, is called epinephrine, sets off an array of biochemical reactions that favor the growth and spread of breast cancer. This study is considered the first to demonstrate the effects of chronic stress on cancer stem cell growth, something previous researchers never specifically focused on. According to the authors, and this is a little complicated, but let's try to make it simple. You can kill all the cells you want in a tumor. But if the stem cells, or what are known as the mother cells, are not killed, then the tumor is going to grow and metastasize. And chronic stress, specifically with the growth of breast cancer stem cells, are a key factor. So the answer is keeping your stress levels low to prevent cancer. That's the most obvious thing to do. But that means you have to take a step back and be honest and reflective and measured and say, okay, there's several types of stress. There's time restraint stressors, where you have to get something done within a particular period of time. And generally, we adapt to those fairly well. If you have to be at work on time, or like doing this broadcast, this is a live broadcast. I can't diddly-daddly around and be 20 minutes late. So every day I know that I have to be on the air at a certain time, so I prepare myself. I get there in advance. I get there early. I'm sitting at my desk and going over all the things I'm going to discuss. Hence, I'm able to take what otherwise might be a stressful situation and de-stress it by prevention, leaving a little early. And therefore, it's okay. I'd rather be early than to be stressed. If I know that I cannot get home in time to make myself a decent meal and enjoy it because it'd be too late, then why not prepare my meals on, let's say, a Sunday afternoon when it's more relaxing, and make my grains and beans, tempeh, whatever it is, and then freeze it. And then the night before, I put it in the fridge. Therefore, if I do end up shooting a film late, which frequently happens, or I'm doing interviews or investigations or counseling, and I don't automatically stop saying, oh, got to go eat, at least I know I'm not going to be stressed because I've taken the opportunity to think ahead. And again, like being early for a meeting or an early for an appointment, I have my food ready. All I have to do is just heat it up. So therefore, there's no stress. What about taking a certain percentage of your money that you earn and putting it away and saying, I will not touch this money no matter how much I want in a compulsive mood to buy something. I'm not going to. That's my emergency money. And who knows when we may need that emergency money. So you develop a discipline that it automatically, you take that aside. I remember when I first came to New York City, I had $12. By the end of the first day, I had $3, not enough to even stay in the YMCA because I had taken a Greyhound bus when I took my jacket off to wash my face and brush my teeth and shave and to go it for this first time in New York City. I put my jacket on, someone had taken the money. I just had some, a couple bucks in my other pocket. And in that moment, I could have either been stressed or I could have said, okay, I've got enough money to make a phone call home if I need to, and my mom will wire me up money for Greyhound bus ride home. But instead of being stressed by what I didn't have, I was overwhelmed with the positive energy of a vibrant city, something I'd never experienced coming from a small town. And the thought that went through my mind is that when I'm walking up the street is, am I going to have a stiff neck because I was looking at all these wonderful buildings? And I spent the night in Central Park, right at the base of Central Park. Excuse me. I was up all night dictating. I write by dictation, so I was dictating 7 hours. My voice is a little raspy this morning. In any case, there was a boulder there, still there, right across from Plaza Hotel. And they were having some kind of celebration party overnight. And it was June 5th, and it was warm. And so I thought, okay, this isn't where I want to be, but it's okay. I'm where I've never been. And when you start a journey, you're starting a whole new way of approaching life and a whole way of learning something different. I said, I'm starting at rock bottom. You don't get any closer to the ground than where I'm at now, sitting on a rock overnight with a couple bucks in my pocket. But I wasn't stressed. The key is you can choose a lot of your stresses that circumstances put you into. You can either become distressed or you can say, it's okay. I'll do something with this. There's a basic rule in life, and this deals with all distress. We can almost all see distress coming at us if we choose to take our time and look at the reality, the real world, and people and circumstances. And therefore, we can prepare. Or we can choose to live with some euphoric or utopian notion, the blissful, ethereal nature of people always being good, kind, gentle, creatives, and they're not. A lot of people are just the opposite. And it's not your or my job to either A, change them or judge them. It's get out of their way so you don't become a part of their orbit. And we have these signals. It's just that we don't want to acknowledge them. If we're conditioned to believe one thing, that's what we want to see in everyone, even when the truth is staring us in the face, in which case then life teaches us a lesson that we needed to learn As painful as it may be, it's still a learning experience. And therefore, we're less likely to repeat that. That's the notion of how we distress ourselves. You can meditate all day long. You can meditate 24 hours. That's not going to do a damn thing for you. Now, you can rub your, a little bald head and your Buddha belly, and you can have, jasmine flowers sprinkled on your earlobes. I don't care. That's all nonsense. It's just nonsense. Come to me. Travel with me for 1 year. Let me show you India and the gurus and the beggars. Let me show you what's really going on around the world with every culture. It will completely disillusion you because you're going to see the truth. And it's going to think you, my God, that's not the image I had. Yeah. But that's what it is. It's what we don't want to acknowledge and we want to glorify or somehow protect. It's like voting for Hillary Clinton. I don't care what your idea of being the first woman president. No. You got to understand what it means just to be honest. But the conditioning prevents that honesty, in which case we get stressed. And then we get distressed by what we can't change. And then the distress can lead to cancer. And now you got a breast cancer. Now, who was the first person who decided that was possible? His name was Lawrence LeShan. He was a friend of mine. He was responsible for getting me into the Institute of Applied Biology as a young and naive scientist who had all these ideas and no place to really experiment with them. And they gave me a little laboratory upstairs and with used equipment that they no longer wanted to use because they had the new state-of-the-art anti-cancer stuff. And in one conversation, he said, before I publish this book, I'm going to let you tell me what you think. And he showed me the case histories of 500 women, all of whom had no history of cancer in their families or themselves. They had no risk factors. But after doing in-depth interviews with each one as a psychologist, and behavioralist, he was able to accurately predict in a very high percentage which of these completely normal, healthy women would develop breast cancer. And I said, well, what's it based upon? And he said, it's simple. Those women who are not appreciated for all the responsibilities that they share with other people, where women will suffer in silence, she'll put on a smile, long after the kids should be picking up their clothes and doing their own laundry and helping with the shopping, long after other people should be going to the markets and doing things, long after other people should be really concerned about sharing common space and jumping in. And every time she looks, these lazy bastards are doing nothing except expecting her to do everything for them. That is when the process of cancer starts, where she begins to maladapt to chronic distress, and that chronic distress leads to breast cancer. He was the first to do it, not the first to talk about stress. Hans Selye, who I knew also, who was the father of stress therapy in the world, he said that, but it was Lawrence LeShan who did that. Others came along and confirmed that in their own work and research. Now, you think about that. Think about what it means. Where do you start? Do you go out and do a yoga class? That's not going to do diddly squat. Yoga is good, but it's not. Yoga is not a replacement for making positive change that's causing you to be toxic and in a quasi-ameliorated way, maladapting to everything and everyone in your life, but jumping out of that cycle every day to go have your green juice or do a yoga or sit on a crystal or rub a hemorrhoid. None of that changes. The only thing that changes is stop looking at the New Age. It's a fraud. It's always been a fraud, but a very profitable one to Tony Robbins and everybody else that claps their hands and smiles like Francis the Talking Mule. I don't think he has a cheek, like just teeth. I look at all this stuff and I think, am I the only fool in the world that realizes everybody's profiting by everybody else's fear of change? Just be honest. If something's not working, say it's not working and say goodbye to it. Goodbye to relationships that don't work, because I've never in my life, not once have I seen a bad relationship become good because people sacrifice everything that was essential to their authentic self to maladapt to someone else's needs for what they should be, to be accepting and happy. The same in work. Oh, I've changed everything who I am as an authentic person, so now I'm the perfect person in a relationship. I'm complete maladaptive. I'm completely adaptive. I'm completely compliant. I'm completely complicit's what you are. Learn to walk away from everything that doesn't work and look at what does. Two ways of putting your life. You put your life where it means something and do something where there's a good outcome, or you put it in frustration, anger, and the unrequited sense that nothing in our stupid system is working the way it should. And we all know that's the case, but we act like it's not. And then one day we end up with breast cancer. And that's only from one cause. There are hundreds of other causes. You cannot deal with any of this unless you learn how to deal with the underlying problems, not how to deal with stress. You see, all the fools out there are dealing with stress. The psychologist, the psychiatrist, the therapist, they give you 3,000 ways to understand what happened when you weren't breastfed. None of that makes a difference. What does make a difference is saying, well, today, I don't have to accept your crap. I'm not going to vote for who you tell me to vote for. These are fools. These are narcissists. These are megalomaniacs. Do you think I believe anyone on television? Do you think I believe anyone on radio? No, these are propagandists. Even if they don't want to be, they have their biases. I'm not interested in someone else's bias to live my life through. No. I'm going to make up my own mind today. If I make a mistake, it's my mistake. Then I'm held accountable for the lesson I have to relearn. And if I have to go to a deeper, more painful level, if I have to go through self-humiliation to get there, I'm going to learn a lesson. And it's not going to be your goddamn Democrat lesson, liberal lesson, conservative lesson, because these are all BS and we know it. These people are just disgusting. They have nothing to do with the human race or it's saving it or the planet, or, because they're not doing a damn thing for anything except themselves. Now, when are we going to learn that lesson? Because if you can't learn that lesson, how in the world are you supposed to prevent any disease? How are you supposed to be happy? How are you supposed to know who's right in your life? How are you supposed to know where you should live, what you should be doing, who should be in your life? What radio program do we listen to? What magazine to read? What to apply your energies towards? What you should master over? If we don't get the fundamentals right, then we're not in the right place at the right time with the right ideas and the right support system. We got the wrong support system. We got propaganda, not truth. We got people who are there because they gain something more from us than what we give to ourselves. What kind of relationship's that? We love you until we don't need you anymore. Wow, that's a nice way to think of someone. Remember I told you the other day, I don't know how many of you heard it, but it's worth mentioning again. I wanted to see who my real friends were. So there was a time in my life where I simply sent out a letter to everyone, and I said, right now I'm going through a little difficult time, and I could use some help, and if you can help, please do. Two people out of over 25 said, sure, whatever you need, I'm here to help you. I didn't say what was wrong. And I told the two people, I don't need your help, but I really appreciate it, and you've shown me you're my friends. I never again spoke with any of the other people. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 30 minutes into our program. Back in a moment. We're going to hear from the chief scientist caught in a complete disinformation campaign. It's a short 2 minute, 47 second. You want to watch this. So go to youtube.com/PRNFM and watch her. The first half, she's promoting vaccines, and the second half, she is reversing it.
If someone gets sick after vaccination, it is usually either a coincidence, an error in administering the vaccine, or very rarely a problem with the vaccine itself. That's why we have vaccine safety systems. Robust vaccine safety systems allow health workers and experts to react immediately to any problems that may arise. They can examine the problem rigorously and scientifically, look at the data, and then promptly address the problem. WHO works closely with countries to make sure that vaccines can do what they do best, prevent disease without risks. New vaccines against malaria, meningitis, and encephalitis in Asia and Africa are now being thoroughly monitored with support from WHO. Vaccines are one of the safest tools we have to prevent disease and ensure a healthy future for all children. Besides the fact that we really don't have very good safety monitoring systems in many countries, and this adds to the miscommunication and the misapprehensions, because we're not able to give clear-cut answers when people ask questions about the deaths that have occurred due to a particular vaccine, and this always gets blown up in the media. One should be able to give a very factual account of what exactly has happened and what the cause of deaths are. But in most cases, there's some obfuscation at that level, and therefore there's less and less trust then in the system. Putting in place the mechanisms, whether they're cohort studies or whether they're sentinel surveillance sites, to be able to monitor what's going on and report back, and then for corrective action to be taken, because unexpected things could arise after introduction, and one always has to be prepared, as we've seen, you know, in the history of many drugs. You've learnt about adverse events only after the drug's been licensed and introduced into the population. So I think that risk is always there, and the population needs to understand that and feel confident that mechanisms are being put in place to study some of those things.
Continuing with some very good information about Boswellia, Boswellia, Serrata, Serrata, and bromelain. That's what you get when you eat that little pithy core of a pineapple. Well, it can help mitigate osteoarthritis symptoms. This is according to St. Anne Sebastiano Hospital in Italy. So, in summary, the researchers found that Boswellia, and this is according to an article published in Journal of Alternative Complementary Medicine, and bromelain, two natural extracts used medicinally since ancient times, are non-pharmaceutical supplements for improving the quality of life for patients with osteoarthritis. In the United States, there are millions of those. By the way, osteoarthritis is a common degenerative joint disease that mostly affects older adults and is usually caused by either our age or obesity, and it causes stiffness and pain in weight-bearing joints like the hips, knees, and spine, but it also can be in your hands and feet. And about 27% of adults over the age of 60 suffer from osteoarthritis. So that's not good, but now there's something good that can help people, and it's inexpensive. And Boswellia is very easily tolerated by the body, and that's important. From Columbia University comes a study from the perspective of what happens in prenatal exposure to flame retardants is linked to reading problems. That's correct. A new study from researchers at Columbia University, Bagelos College of Physicians and Surgeons, suggests that prenatal exposure can increase your risk of reading problems. The published article is in Environmental International. Now, why is this important? Because there's estimated 2 million children have learning disorders, and about 80% have a reading disorder. And so now this is just one reason why we have to be very conscious of not bringing all these flame retardant materials into our house, because they're going to affect brain development and might alter the brain process involved in reading. So, you know, they're natural materials out there. Also, from the University of Naples, which is in Italy, we know that there's a lot of pathogenesis of infant colic, and gut microbiota seems to be involved, supporting the potential therapeutic role of probiotics. And so they found out that one particular type of probiotic called Bifido, B-I-F-I-D-O, bacterium, was able, in this randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study, to make a difference, especially with infants with colic. Now, we know that these bacteria are good bacteria, and we know that it helps adults, but now it's shown to help infants with that. I guess it was 20 years ago, I first read an article that showed that black cumin seed oil can make a big difference in helping with severe pain. Diabetic neuropathy pain was one of them. Now there's a brand new study from Mashhad University of Medicine that the black seed, its name is Nigella, N-I-G-E-L-L-A, sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A, more commonly known as black seed, is widely used as probably one of the most powerful therapeutic plants in the world. And it's been used for thousands of years in Ayurvedic medicine. Now, this study of 60 patients with kidney stones offers some really strong evidence that it's effective in treating or reducing the size of painful kidney stones. And by the way, kidney stones affect some 10% of people in the Western world, with an annual U.S. healthcare cost about $2 billion. So natural therapies for this common condition include black currants, cranberries, omega-3 fatty acids, and I would say at the top of my list would be olive oil and vitamin C together. But one plant stands out for its stone-fighting potential, and that's Nigella sativa, or black seeds, whose seeds have a long history as a food and medicine. So that's one of the things that we should be using now. So black cumin seed oil is effective against kidney stones. So that's the latest one on that. And from San Diego State University comes a study about common foods that can help landscape the jungle of our gut microbiome. What's that mean? It means that there's a way to harvest food as medicine, what we call functional foods. They have a specific medicinal function in the body. And what they found is that the foods we eat most commonly affect our gut microbiota, which can be good or bad, depending upon the healthiness of the food itself. And new research shows that they do so by triggering the production of what is known as bacteriophage, viruses that infect and replicate inside bacteria. And compounds in these foods have an antimicrobial effect, which causes the phage to replicate. Anyhow, to go to the short end of this discussion, I looked up these foods that are antimicrobial and help with the probiotic. Raw honey, right at the top of the list. Licorice, stevia, that's a sugar substitute derived from the stevia plant. Hot sauces, herbs like oregano and cayenne and cinnamon and clove and rhubarb, uva ursi, U-V-A, U-R-S-I, which is called the bear berry, and neem, N-E-E-M, extract. Now, you may have heard of some of these, like, for example, they tested toothpaste, since it's known to contain antimicrobial compounds, and of these, honey, stevia, neem, and uva ursi had the most impact in triggering phage production, which kills bad bacteria. And that's important. So now you're dealing with a microbiome, micro, M-I-C-R-O, biome, B-I-O-M-E. Bacteria is what it really means. And this microbiome is composed of hundreds of different bacteria and the phages they host. And so if you have the right foods, then you end up with good bacteria. If you have the wrong foods, you end up with very pathogenic bacteria. So meat and sugar, alcohol and processed brown foods like potato chips and pretzels and buns and toast and pizza crusts, those are all bad for you and bad for that. And then it can cause inflammation, that can lead to cancer and diabetes and Crohn's disease and irritable bowel syndrome. So it really does make a difference what you put in your body. And this was all published in Gut Microbiomes or Gut Microbes. So that's important. Also, from Life Extension, B vitamin folate, which leads to folic acid, is an important part of a healthy diet. And this is the week that we're in now that is called the Folic Acid Awareness Week. And just so you know, folic acid is a water-soluble B vitamin that occurs naturally in food and is essential for health. And folic acid is the synthetic form, which is found in vitamin supplements and added to fortified foods. Folate needs to be consumed as part of a healthy diet. In general, folate is necessary for healthy blood and is very important to women in reducing their risk of having a baby with a serious birth defect. So eating a healthy diet that contains lots of fruits and vegetables and other foods that have folic acid or folate in them or added to them, and foods that are natural sources of folate are oranges, orange juice, cooked dry beans like peas, deep greens like spinach and mustard greens and kale, broccoli, asparagus, peanuts, almonds, and avocados. So as long as you have a good diet like that, you're going to be getting your folic acid, or you can take a supplement. I suggest upwards of anywhere between 700 to micrograms to 1 milligram of methylated folate. And understand why. Why do you need folate anyhow? Because it is essential in making and maintaining new body cells. It's needed to make DNA and RNA, the building blocks of cells. It helps prevent changes to DNA that may lead to cancer. It helps reduce the risk of delivering a baby with neural tube defects. It combines with B12 to form hemoglobin in red blood cells. It helps prevent anemia. And it may also protect against heart disease and stroke by maintaining normal levels of homocysteine. It helps prevent depression, and it helps reduce risk of macular degeneration, a major disease of the eye that leads to blindness. And homocysteine is the amino acid that is emerging as a new risk factor for atherosclerosis and heart attacks and strokes. So that's why we should be consuming this. It's important. Now that's the latest on health and nutrition. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want you to listen to and this is important. Want to have you listen to a few minutes, about 3 minutes, of a group of scientists and these are architects and engineers, who are explaining why this is not good what happened at Building 7, because they're talking about the laws of physics, meaning you can't have a building that tall just collapse on itself unless you had nothing resisting it underneath. But you had all these steel beams and you had all these concrete slabs and concrete support systems. So what happened to those? Well, according to people who were there on the site, there were all these explosions, then it just collapsed into its own footprint. It took 7 years for them to come up with an answer, and then they acknowledge that the first 100 feet or the first 10 floors collapsed because there was no resistance. That means there were demolitions. But how did those demolitions occur? It takes months with engineers and inspectors and architects to know exactly where you put your munitions, and then you have to have all the permits signed, because you do it wrong, one of these buildings could just fall over in the middle of a road, killing people and damaging other buildings. It has to be perfect. Well, Building 7 collapse was perfect. Well, then why wasn't there a word about this in the official 9/11 report? Why didn't anyone in the media report on how did you have the owner of the building telling the world, and I have the recording of it, that, we were told by the whoever it was, fire inspectors, that the building had to be pulled. Pulled means demolishing the building. And they did that in, an hour or two? That's not humanly possible. That meant that building was prepped to go down prior to this. Why isn't that important for any investigative journalist or any real journalist at any major media to discuss? and yet it hasn't been. So we're going to hear this now.
World Trade Center 7 collapsed at freefall acceleration for more than 100 feet of its fall. What does the speed of the collapse reveal to us?
Essentially, in less than 7 seconds, Tower 7 came down upon itself.
It's just like taking your car keys out and just dropping them. That's how fast the building came down, for over 100 feet. And the only way you can get that is when there's zero resistance. And so what we're looking at is a building just coming straight down, falling right through itself with zero resistance. Buildings don't have zero resistance, which is why you feel comfortable walking into a building.
This building had 40,000 tons of structural steel in its structural system, and that is intended to keep it from going anywhere.
I'd heard people say, well, it came down at free fall or close to free fall and so forth, so I decided I'd measure it myself. I had a simple tool at the time called a physics toolkit, which allowed me to take a video and put a dot on each frame to follow the motion of things. And I realized that it's actually coming down at free fall, pretty much dead on the acceleration of gravity. Well, NIST, in their final draft, was saying that the building came down with 40% longer than free fall time.
How can such a publicly visible, easily measurable quantity be set aside?
A free fall time would be an object that has no structural components below it. There was a structural resistance that was provided in this particular case.
He was making our case for us. You can't have free fall when there's support. And in the final report, they modified it, and they actually admitted there was a period of free fall involved. But they never changed their model. Like, how do you all of a sudden allow for free fall when they just got done explaining how it couldn't have been in free fall?
NIST is telling us that the building below it ceased to exist for the first few seconds of the collapse of the building. Well, things in physics just don't cease to exist and cease to resist the forces that are on them. The building didn't disappear so the building can fall for 100 feet at free fall speed. That's impossible. That's a violation of the fundamental law of physics that says that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
If floors fall, they tend to fall and are braced by the floor directly beneath it. And there's some delay there.
Because of redundancy, because of all the other columns in the building that were not affected.
Even if a floor were to collapse, it still wouldn't be able to collapse all of the connections simultaneously at the rate that it did without secondary explosions.
I want you to hear, we're going to have Les Leopold on in a second, but I want, Jameson, but I want you to hear this one report about the firefighters, first responders, who were at Building 7. Listen to what they have to say.
He's in the lobby and the third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
What was it like?
Horrible.
Like hell. You don't want to know.
The whole building just collapsed on us inside the lobby.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
That was the planet.
Yeah, definitely secondary explosion. But we was inside waiting to go upstairs, and on the way upstairs, the whole thing blew, and we just collapsed on everybody inside the lobby.
Similar to the first tower coming down, secondary.
I don't know about the first one, but I know the second one was terrible. Then there was a third one too after that one.
Third explosion after that.
Yes, sir.
And you were inside.
Everybody was inside the building waiting to go upstairs. And they just let loose. Everything just let loose inside the building.
So what you told me is that there was plane or whatever hit the building, then a secondary explosion.
It was like three explosions after that. We came in after the fire. We came when the fire was going on already. We was in the staging area inside the building,
okay,
waiting to go upstairs.
Then they exploded.
The whole lobby collapsed on the lobby inside.
But then there were other doors.
Okay, what you have is you can go to Gary Null or PRN.fm and you have all these first responders saying they heard explosions in the basement, There were news reports where you see one firefighter coming out saying, get out of the building. There are bombs going off. Another fire chief says two bombs have gone off. If a third goes out, the whole thing is going to collapse. Why did these hundreds of firsthand witnesses on the scene, why weren't they asked to testify about the explosions occurring, and especially Building 7, that the owner of the building, and we had the video clip, acknowledges, well, the fire marshal said that, you know, the fire was out of control, which, by the way, others say it was not, and they had to pull the building, meaning they had to implode it. Here's a question. If you've ever seen a hotel or any major building that has been collapsed into its own footprint, they have taken months to go in there, specialty teams with special detonating devices, working with the architects and engineers to decide where exactly to place these explosive devices and how to time them so that the building can fall free fall into its own footprint. That takes months. Are you going to tell me that in the middle of all this chaos, the Larry Silverstein, who I believe that's his correct name, said, yeah, pull the building, Building 7 we're talking about, not the building Tower 1 and Tower 2, and that within minutes they were able to organize all the munitions, all the ordnances, get all the experts. That is not humanly possible. That takes months, not minutes. And yet, why isn't that a major line of reporting? Les Jamieson, what is your answer, since you've been on top of this from day one, and you've interviewed the architects and engineers who say it's not humanly possible for Building 7 to have come down that way unless it was demolished?
Right, right, Gary. So true. My explanation comes down to the fact that Building 7, which fell at 5:20 that afternoon, that's basically 8 hours after the attacks of the planes on Building 1 and 2, that's Tower 1 and 2, when people actually come into contact with the video and also audio that you just played, there is no other explanation other than the official story is completely false. We've been conned. We've been lied to. And yes, just like a matter of fact, Dan Rather, right, CBS News anchor, famous for decades here, was reporting that very day, and he said on air, this looks just like a typical collapse or demolition of a hotel or coliseum that you would see, that we've seen on TV many, many times. Looks the very same. So you have the admission that the collapse of Building 7 was controlled demolition. And of course, if the public was to widely have access and understand and see the video for themselves, that would immediately call into question the official story and basically immediately change the national understanding and perception of the fact that the 9/11 attacks were in fact part of what I would argue is what the organization called the New Americans for a new American Century, where they cited the call for a new Pearl Harbor. And this isn't a report that they issued a year before 9/11 called Rebuilding America's Defenses, in which they basically advocated for the transformation of the U.S. military to become so ultra-powerful that it would ensure global dominance, global military supremacy, but this would not be supported by the American people without a catastrophic, I'm quoting here, a catastrophic catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. So I would urge every listener to go online and just do a search on WTC7 controlled demolition. You can see all the short videos. And especially, there's a couple videos out there that show Building 7 on one side with a picture or a video of an actual commercial controlled demolition on the right side. And you can see the exact similar characteristics. And Gary, let me just speak a little bit about the cover-up. First of all, the media, which is absolutely central to the cover-up, played thousands of times the video of the collapses of buildings 1 and 2, right? Trade Center 1 and 2, over and over and over again to basically traumatize the American public and to just overwhelm, yes, the American psyche. Now, Building 7 was only played on air, I believe, the night of 9/11, but never since. Why is that? Why is it that the 9/11 Commission report, the official 9/11 investigative body, did not even mention the collapse of Building 7? Then why is it that the study done by the National Institute for Standards and Technology, which was tasked with explaining, scientifically explaining the collapses of the towers 1, 2, and 7, why is it that it took them 6 years to come out with the report on Building 7, in which it was filled with fraudulent statements? I can mention a few of them, but I, the most important point is that after being challenged by experts, by architects and engineers, they finally had to admit there was free fall for the first 2.5 seconds of the collapse of Building 7. And there's no other explanation other than zero resistance in this 47-story steel frame building. And the only thing that could cause zero resistance is controlled demolition. So,
Les, we're out of time. Yes. Les Jamison, right. We're out of time. People can go to the site and see that. I just want them to know that we have the video clip of the owner of Building 7 saying in the late afternoon that they had to, quote, pull the building, meaning collapse it. And I'm saying that it's not humanly possible to pull that size of a building in a matter of minutes, let alone weeks, that it would normally take with, in the middle of chaos, to have all the engineers, the architects, the munitions necessary, the ordinances, get them in place. It would not be possible. That meant that that had to have been planted prior to this. And those are factual. Now, I don't know who was behind 9/11, and I'm not pretending I do know. I just know that this acknowledgement by the owner of the building saying that this, and then having all these first responders say they heard explosions, and all that was carried in the mainstream media, then the mainstream media never again talked about the explosions that were heard. It was only the jets going in, and that was it. The American public deserves an honest investigation, since it seems now that we know that the Pentagon, the Defense Department, the White House, State Department was lying to us about Afghanistan, and the Washington Post published the Afghanistan papers. Maybe at some point we'll know the truth about what happened with Building 7, let alone 1 and 2. Thank you very much, Les Jamison. I'm Gary Nall. Watch the videos. We have 4 of them up there. Watch them in their entirety. Listen to the real experts talk about you can't have 10 floors collapsed instantly unless all resistance was removed, meaning all the steel structures, all the steel beams, concrete, all that had to be removed, and only a demolition can do that, so it could free fall. And so we have more questions than we have honest answers. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Hey, what's up now? Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.